Deep Dive Cleantech. Dein Business-, Investment- und Technologietauchgang zum grüneren Wirtschaften von DWR Eco mit deiner Moderatorin Doreen Rietentiet. Ab geht's!
Hallo und herzlich willkommen zu einer neuen Ausgabe des Deep Dive Cleantech Podcasts. Damit wir in der Klimakrise nicht absaufen, tauchen wir wie immer mit euch in die Lösungen der Green Economy ein. Green oder auch Climate Tech kann aber nur nachhaltig und zukunftsgerecht sein, wenn wir wesentlich mehr Frauen in der Industrie eine Chance geben. Wie das klappen kann, was es dazu braucht, genau darüber spreche ich mit meiner Co-Founderin von Women in Climate Tech und Innovation, Sarah Needham.
Hi Sarah, it's a pleasure having you on the podcast. And before we take a deep dive into female leadership in climate tech, please tell us, what is it you do?
Hi, I am a tech leadership coach and advisor. I usually work with executive leaders and executive leadership teams on helping them really understand who they are, leverage their strengths to enable them to create diverse teams that can actually unleash their unlimited potential. Because I feel like there's so much potential in the world, in every single human, and we are not able currently to engage them in a way that we can all contribute to creating a better future.
And we, you've actually started the Women in Climate Tech and Innovation, as we call it now, and we're now running it together. And I'm very happy that I joined you and Carla, who's also a co-founder of this. But tell me a little bit why you started this and how a few years ago.
Yeah, sure. So after I left industry, I started a coaching qualification actually to understand almost where I went wrong and why I couldn't achieve the impact that I wanted to have within the business, or I felt like I should have been able to have within the business. And what was clear to me while I was doing my coaching qualification was, oh my goodness, it's not just me. There are so many people out there who are unclear as to how to create an impact in the world with the skills that they have and, you know, the things that are important to them. So that alignment, if you want, from purpose and values. And whilst I was doing my coaching qualification, Climate Kick in Berlin came to me and said, would you be our tech coach in Berlin? Because obviously I'm an engineer by trade. And I thought, wow, climate tech and people and leadership, yeah, I'm there. So I was the tech coach for about a year. And during that time, one of the things I recognized is these startups, they don't need help with the tech. They need help with understanding how to be a leader. This transition from having a great idea to running a great business is, you know, it's very different. And we also saw that there was a massive gap between the amount of women or female entrepreneurs we had applying for the accelerator, and also the almost the confidence and just creating a space for the women's voices to be heard. So we started this, what we called at the time Women Supporting Women, as a way to support the female founders within the program, actually, with additional inputs, but also just creating a space for them to network and to understand what it meant to be a woman in this space.
Herzlich willkommen zum Rettungsring der Woche, unserer wöchentlichen Quelle der Hoffnung in diesen stürmischen Zeiten der Klimakrise. Unser aktueller Partner des Rettungsrings der Woche ist die Firma Enersys, die Teil des EU-finanzierten Projektes Positif sind. Ein Rahmenwerk für intelligentere und grünere Plus-Energiestädte, damit Städte sicherer und umweltfreundlicher werden und besser auf die Bedürfnisse ihrer Bürgerinnen und Bürger, Unternehmen und Verbände reagieren können, ist es entscheidend, Infrastrukturen, Technologien und Dienstleistungen intelligenter miteinander zu vernetzen. Grundlage sind Daten, die Enersys hilft, mit zur Verfügung zu stellen. So können in diesem Fall die Leuchtturmstädte Alkmaar in den Niederlanden und Évora in Portugal mehr als 16 Gigawattstunden pro Jahr an erneuerbare Energien intelligent erzeugen, Energieersparnisse von über 2 Gigawattstunden pro Jahr realisieren und Emissionen von knapp 10 Tonnen CO2-Äquivalente pro Jahr reduzieren. Enersys kann mit ihrem digitalen Zwilling Gaia die energie- und klimarelevanten Daten so nutzbar machen, dass sie für die Energiewirtschaft, Städte und Kommunen eine bessere Planung und Kommunikation von Klimaschutzmaßnahmen ermöglichen. Mehr erfahrt ihr unter enersys.ch und in unseren Shownotes.
That's really interesting. You said you're an engineer, so that means you've been kind of growing up in a man's world, right? And from what I understood, you were in the automotive industry. So how was that for you, and why did you leave?
Yeah, so I was in aerospace for 17 years, and I worked my way up through the tech part of the organization up to assistant chief engineer level. And I actually found that sometimes, or most of the time at that point, being a woman was actually highly advantageous because I was often the only woman in the room. So people knew who I was, they knew my name. And actually, you know, as I went up the organisation, it actually felt more difficult because what happened was I became more and more conscious. I became conscious of, you know, speaking out, the fact that I didn't see things in the same way that other people saw them. And that sometimes made it very difficult to be the odd one out. And I often felt like I just don't fit. You know, is no one else seeing what I'm seeing? But I had no tools as to how to have those kind of conversations, which made it super difficult the higher I went within the organization to kind of stand up and say what I thought, or be able to really hold my own in some of the discussions, because I didn't always appreciate some of the behaviors within the room, but I didn't know how to call it out.
Now, that was also part, and I'm jumping a little bit here, of the discussion that we had at the launch of the Women for Climate Tech and Innovation last Thursday at the British Embassy. That came up a lot, of being in a room and having to overcome your own authenticity in a way to fit in, or feeling not fitting in. So what I took away from the conversations last week was that just be yourself, right? Do not adapt to fit in. Just be yourself. And that is the value, from my point of view also, that women add to the top of the table.
Yeah, totally. I mean, Kat said it, didn't she, when she introduced from the embassy, and we heard it a couple of times on the panel as well that you held, and we've heard it multiple times on the other panels we've had, both at Siemens Energy and at Impact Hub throughout this year. The almost the conundrum that we're in as women, that we want to belong because we need to belong. We've got that, you know, that human desire to belong to the group. And yet we fundamentally see things differently, and this is the value. And it is super hard to be yourself in a place where you don't feel like you fit in, but standing tall still and feeling like you can add value by sharing what is different. And this takes a lot of courage. It also takes, you know, some really good skills to know how to do it in a way where your voice can be heard, because we don't necessarily always feel that, you know, we don't feel like we're right, but we need to open up, or help other people open up space to have a more challenging conversation, which people often struggle with in a business context. And so it's not only the fact that we are seeing things differently, we need to be able to speak about it in a way that feels, like you say, authentic to us, but actually it's almost that the burden's on us to create the space for other people to hear us, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, isn't that the fact that it's actually crucial, and this is where we get back to the topic of actually climate tech and really making an impact or having an impact, isn't the fact that women see things differently, they see the growth differently, and, you know, not speaking about that we're not growing and that there is no, you know, profit and stuff like that. We obviously need that. But I think women see growth differently, they incorporate more social and more, generally also environmental standards, I think, and which leads also to the fact that they in turn then receive less money from investors because their Excel sheets are not as outrageous as the ones from male founders. So they, you know, because they think differently. And isn't that exactly the skill set and the mindset actually that we need in corporations, in companies, in order to really have an impact with companies, with what we do to really achieve certain goals that we set in the climate tech space, or generally in climate change space, that will then in return, you know, like look at the wars happening right now, maybe, you know, even have other impacts across the globe, because people are not fighting for water, for energy, and whatever else. So, I mean, it sounds really basic, but it's with more women at the top of the table, wouldn't we in the ultimately just have maybe a different type of world that we live in?
Yeah, I mean, we touched on this last Thursday as well, is we've shown, we've proven that the leadership we have in the world today is not working. And, you know, there's an awful lot around us that we feel very uncomfortable with. And this is where I do believe that having more diverse leadership, and I often say it's all about the women and it's nothing about the women. We're the easiest to identify as being different, as not having our voices heard right now, as not having, an, you know, parity in leadership positions. And yet we need those, we need to be having those braver conversations as to, you know, what is beyond growth, as in, you know, this exponential growth that most businesses are driving to, this short-termism. What is the next, almost the next paradigm that we're moving into? And this is the crunch point that you've just said. What a lot of women especially struggle to do is we know we need to create a new paradigm here. And yet we need to still play in the old paradigm to get money to be able to grow our businesses. And so this is, you know, the difficulty, I guess, facing a lot of women, which is why we need so much support to enable them to be able to do that, to create their businesses in the current paradigm, but already be looking to challenge and create the new.
Mm-hmm. We had quite a few founders there last week and at the event before. And so I think just touching a little bit on the challenges they went through, and more or less also on the solution and how they made it work, is also an interesting one. So across the board, all of them said it's not easy. Right, it's hard. But then again, it's probably hard even for male founders to raise money. But it's even harder for women. So, but the one thing they all said is reach out, or the way they did it also is to reach out to a lot of people, including male founders and male pals in your network, and really do not be afraid. Do not be afraid to ask questions. Do not be afraid of asking for support. Now, my question to you, because you've been in this space and also coached many women for much longer, why is it that women don't ask for support? And didn't we learn that? Isn't it something, because men seem to do it and they seem to do it successfully. So, I mean, if that is like kind of part of, you know, really just overcoming your own, not saying fear, but yeah, challenges of reaching out, then it sounds pretty easy to me to get over this.
There are a number of factors that are built in, and I often say, you know, imagine we could take out the programming chip, reprogram it and put it back in again. But effectively, we've all been primed in this society that we're all growing up in, that we're all living in. And that society is a society which we as women are told various things as we're growing up. And it's not just women, men as well. You know, they're given a different programming, but they're given very clear programming. And, you know, women are attuned to help other people, to put other people first, to really kind of question, well, is this about me? And this, you know, makes it very difficult. And while you're in this, often in an organisation, when you ask a question and you get a bad response, so somebody either makes you feel silly for asking that question, or, you know, someone calls you out, whatever that might be. So if you don't get that feeling that it's safe to ask a question, you think twice before asking the question the next time. You think twice before asking for help. And this is a society we're all living in. it is not unusual that someone coming in, I mean, I often think when I went in as a graduate, I was really open-minded. I came from a completely different engineering background, so I did ask lots of questions. And generally, I got fairly good responses. But I found the more senior I got, there was a feeling that you should know this. So it was almost like it's a vulnerability to ask a question, to ask for help. And we have to help people in understanding, A, like we said earlier, how will you ask for help? But B, how to create those trusting networks where you can ask for help. And often as women, we're actually pitched against each other in a very corporate environment. You know, there's only one woman at the top table. So you almost like you're always fighting the other women to get there. And this is some of what drives this, you know, not wanting to ask for help, because we've got learned behaviours that actually show us that it can be almost dangerous to our belonging in the system to ask for help. We might get rejected. We might get laughed at. And this is why creating these inclusive environments, which what I'm obviously talking about in the corporate world, is so important, because until you do, people are shutting up. They're not asking the questions. They're not, you know, able to innovate and be really creative because they're holding back.
That's a really interesting part, because this is also the reason why we do have Women for Climate Tech and Innovation, and we do set inclusive environments, right? It's one thing that people don't realize, that it's just not feeling comfortable or respected in a way in the world, and then also always thinking about how you come across, which is something that Kat raised from the British Embassy. And she said, like, it's to overcome this. And my question to you is, because you, again, you're coaching many women, how do you teach them to overcome this fear? How to overcome the fear of asking questions, of being in a board meeting at the top of the table and not thinking, oh my God, everybody's going to look at me. Everybody's thinking, why is she asking that stupid question? Or, you know, like just feeling insecure. How do we overcome this?
There are lots of different tools and techniques that we can use. And it's not just women, it's everybody who doesn't fit the normal, what you might call societal expectations. And those things are very much around designing space. So actually designing the space in which you're working. And that includes designing allies within the system, designing networks within the system. So, for example, if somebody speaks over you, there's somebody else in the room that will stand up on your behalf and say, actually, I want to hear what she's got to say. Please, can we just let her finish? And also ensuring that what you're talking about has got a purpose. What's the intention behind it? Because whenever you can connect what you're doing to a purpose that's bigger than you, the barrier to engage is a lot lower. Because all of a sudden, it's not about you. It's about the goal. It's about what you can create. It's the impact that you can have. And it's proven that when that barrier comes down, it gets a lot easier to engage. And the worst, the biggest is that I often say to people, what's the worst that's going to happen? You know, if we're talking about a financer, they're going to say no. If we're talking, you know, about going into having a discussion with someone and asking for a decision, the worst is they're going to say no. The worst is that actually you realise that business you're working in is not aligned to what you want to achieve. And actually, I prefer to know that quicker. So by getting, always, it's almost like you can get the no's quicker and you can recognise that that isn't a place where you want to invest your energy, invest your time, then actually you've got a choice to make. Quite often people sit in roles or they sit in businesses like kind of I did, where it wasn't aligned to my values. It wasn't feeling like I could really grow within the business, and yet I felt stuck. And the sooner we can help people recognize, actually, this isn't serving me, I'm not able to contribute my unique skills, or, you know, I don't feel like I'm really add value here, then you've got a choice to make. The sooner you see it, the choice is there Do I want to continue to invest for whatever reason, you know, security or whatever? Or do I actually want to step out and do something differently? And even when you're talking about investment, you know, I always say it should be a hell yes or a hell no, because what we want is investors and co-creators in your system to be supportive, to be enablers, rather than kind of being able to beat you up with a stick if you're not achieving X, Y, or Z. You want them to be able to step in and help.
Mm-hmm. But when that's talking women within the workforce, meaning within corporations, what about as founder? If you want to found a company of you in the field of engineering and you have a genius idea in terms of, I don't know, CO2 storage, and you're a woman, what would you recommend? Is it wise to just get a male founder in order to, you know, raise money quicker and sooner, or to, you know, stay within your comfort zone and get a female co-founder, and then, you know, and go out to the world from there? I know I would take the option with a male founder because I know it's much quicker and it's much easier to raise the money. Although there are exceptions of women, like we had last week on a panel with Schultz Gota, who is a single female founder in the climate tech space and raised a very good amount of money recently. And then also there is Bloom Equity, who we had present with Claire Murray, who just raised a substantial big fong, and also in the climate tech space, and there are three women. So there are extreme great role models out there, but it's not the masses, is it?
Yeah, I think it comes back to, again, what you want to achieve and who is the right fit for you. So I spend a lot of time with people doing things like strengths tests and then looking for the counterbalance to their strengths, because your biggest strengths are your biggest weaknesses as well. So quite often you need somebody who's going to sit at the other end and be able to see things you can't. That's obviously what diversity is about. It isn't about men and women. It's about having diversity of thought. Whoever you're going to found with, you've got to really want to do something with them. I often say it's harder to get out of than a marriage. And the more that you can design up front with that person, whoever it is, how you're going to support each other, how you're going to be able to interact together. Because it's all fine when everything's going well, but as we heard and as we've heard on all of the panels that we've had, you know, those aren't the times that challenge us. They're not the times when it's easy. It's when things get tough. And that's where the founding relationship is crucial. And yes, maybe you do want to get somebody on who is very assertive and, you know, is really good at connecting with people and asking for things, somebody who's actually really, you know, that those are their strengths. But whether it's a man or a woman, personally, I would say, you know, it shouldn't matter. Yes, we do know it does matter. And there are a lot of investors now who are looking for companies that do have balance. So that aren't just 100% women, who aren't just 100% men. They're, you know, you can see that the investment in these companies where there's a balance is going up, and the investment in only female founded, so what you might call diverse founders, is also increasing, albeit at a slower rate. So I think, again, it really depends on what your skill sets are, what you want, what your purpose is, and how quickly you want to move. Because there's always that saying, you know, if you want to go fast, go it alone. If you want to go far, then go together. And I do believe, and this is obviously, again, the reason we've founded Women in Climate Tech and Innovation, is we believe that co-creation and collaboration is the way forward. It's how we can shift, as we were talking about earlier, this paradigm to be able to enable us to create innovative solutions. We've got to go across the silos.
No, I mean, that talking about like going into marriage or like founding together, I totally agree with this. But when it comes especially to climate tech, which is the field we're talking about, there is the requirement of a lot of high upfront costs. You know, there is lack of access to traditional funding. you know, then we have obstacles when it comes to climate adaptation already, adaptations. So there are a lot of barriers still, unfortunately, for generally, and I'm not talking just women, go into the field, right? You have to have like a big stamina like a long breath, as we say in German, to get into the area. And after all these events that we have also now with women and climate tech, and like, what is your conclusion? Like, how do we get or encourage more women, besides showcasing role models, which is what we do, to really take the path and say, I'm doing it. I'm going out there. I'm setting up my company. I'm getting funded because the world needs it.
Good question. Role models obviously is a big one. We have to show people who are doing this and have got funding and are able to create these businesses. And we also need to help people create the networks. Like I said earlier, we're not used to, as women, creating networks with other people or other women like us. So creating those networks is super important. Helping them to ask for help, which is another thing that we always do with our events, is, you know, we're asking people up front, what are your problems? What do you want to solve at this event? Who do you need to connect to? And then breaking down those silos. So bringing the VCs, the corporates, the investors, the founders, along with think tanks and journalists and other people all together, because we know that if they meet these people when they don't necessarily need anything, but they start building a relationship, then when things are, when they do need someone, the likelihood that they will reach out if they've already met them, if they've already had a conversation, is much higher. And this in itself, creates impact and enabling people. You saw it from the feedback that we got last week. It's about designing that space where they really feel that they can come in, they can be vulnerable, they can ask questions. This isn't just about having women in the room either. We've got the allies there. But we're designing the space in a way that we're encouraging people to share what's difficult. Because we can all talk about what's great until the cows come home. We see it on social media every single day. But we're not talking enough about the challenges that we've got and asking other people to help engage to help us solve them. So this co-creation and collaboration piece, and actually, bringing people together to have these conversations gives them confidence when they go back into their business, when they go back in their day-to-day, to actually take the next step, to say, oh, I heard that person talking about that. Maybe, if they're struggling with it, because we often think everyone else has got it sussed, then it just gives us the confidence to be able to move. So the networks, creating the space to ask questions, creating the space to be vulnerable and say, I don't know, and who can help me with this, is just the most important bit that we've seen. And you saw the emotional reactions that we had, people coming up at the end and throwing their arms around us and saying thank you. And this wasn't just one or two people. This was a lot of people who really felt like they hadn't been to something like this before. They hadn't been enabled in this way to be able to ask questions like this.
There's one thing that I want to touch upon, and that is, it's proven that women-led climate tech startups especially tend to yield better financial returns. I mean, that's across probably women-led startups, not just in a climate tech fit, but also in a climate tech fit when they have also strong social and environmental missions, right? So they're not going in there just for the pure money reason in most cases. Yet they're still receiving, and that's been a number that's been discussed like up and down this year, 2% of VC money, right? And we've talked about it at numerous occasions and numerous events that we had. And all I get is that, let's put it that way, I haven't heard a solution to this. How can we get VCs and investors to believe or to trust women more than they have done before and also put in more money in female-led startups. And also maybe even what I would require even is a certain parity in startups. Like the same way that a VC sets standards for sustainability criteria when they sign a term sheet, why can't they also put in gender criteria? Because the business will not just run better, it'll have a bigger impact socially, environmentally, and that's proven. I mean, the statistics is there. So that is what keeps me up at night, is why can't we set, you know, certain standards, not just on corporate level for parity, but also for investing into startups, especially when it comes to the climate tech field. But I'm wondering, what are your takeaways from these discussions, and how can we increase, again, the investments in female-led startups and generally the interest of VCs diving into women startups? Because what we don't want is another whole set of female VCs, because that's like going back to boys' schools and girls' schools, and that can't be, in my opinion, the answer to the problem.
No, it's a good question. I just coming back to where you were a minute ago, I think it's the gap. We're still seeing this gap, and you can call it, you know, when we're talking about sustainability, we're talking about greenwashing. When you're talking about diversity, whether you want to call it diversity washing or gender washing, all the intentions are there. Everybody knows the stats. So theoretically, you know, change should be happening because it's proven. And this is the whole point of the fact that it's a systemic problem, is that the people making the decisions can't see other options. I don't believe anyone wakes up in the morning and says, you know, I'm going to try and hold women back from, you know, finding their place and getting as much money as everybody else. But the systems at the minute are, like you say, supporting or reiterating themselves in the fact that, you know, the stats are proving that women are not as successful in fundraising as men. So we've got to look at the system of what are we trying to achieve, what's the outcome, and it's almost like looking at the bigger goal. And yes, there are simple things that you can do, which is when you invest, certainly get companies to sign something to say, we will keep within certain boundaries in terms of gender equality, in terms of ensuring that the customer we're designing for is part of the solution, so that, you know, you don't have men designing an app which is for women's health, for example, because, you know, all this stuff is happening right now. So there is something that's got to be done around that. And there is a fundamental shift that needs to happen in our system as to, you know, what does investment look like? What are the returns on the investment? How can we rewrite those rules to enable a bit more kind of leeway? Because overall, we know that there's a higher chance of return on investment from a female or at least a diverse-led startup. So what are the adjustments that we need to make in the system to enable us to see this differently? And this is where I think it is really difficult. And if you look even at what happened, I think, in the EU the other week, the focus of VCs for the next year was sustainability and gender equality. And so if that's the aim, the goals, what are the actions? And again, this comes back to exactly why we're doing what we're doing, is we're fed up of hearing all these great intentions and hearing all these amazing stories as to what we need to do, but nobody actually taking the step. Okay, so how do we turn that into action? How do we have these difficult conversations to rewrite the structures to enable that to happen?
Totally agree. And to me, it's also the VC world needs to change. I think, you know, get away from the quota woman that a lot of them have and just really be diverse, right? And I think then the shift will come from within. And that is something I also get from a lot of startups when they talk to VCs. You know, they initially talk to maybe a more junior investor person at the VC and who are totally keen on their idea, and then the higher they get up into the white male area, then it's rejection a lot of times. And so I think, and I'm not talking about climate VCs here, obviously, but the more traditional ones, which is also the reason why women have, you know, left the traditional VC world a lot. I think there's been a big exodus there. So that needs to change as well, right? In order to move on with the climate goals and really achieve more sustainability from the start of founding companies. So really gender diversity, sustainability criteria in the term sheets, and then further up even in the corporate world. And I mean, those criteria, in my opinion, should also be taken in by banks and all the big institutions that that fund corporates, you know, when they give, I don't know, when they give, when the EU, or like, the EU mainly through the countries, give hundreds of millions to a company, yeah, to build a factory. Why can't we put in a certain term sheet that is on sustainability criteria as well as on gender criteria? I mean, that would be, for me, the basic.
Yeah, totally.
Right? So if you build a factory with, I don't know, thousands of workers, shouldn't there be a certain gender goal in this if they get taxpayers' money?
Yeah, we've got to look at where we can create these systems through politics, because we have to be able to leverage what we're requiring people to do to get government funding for things. And you are beginning to see it, and this is why ESG is, although it might become a bit of a tick box exercise for many corporates,
yeah,
it is actually moving in that direction, that there's a lot more awareness building as to kind of things that really we ought to be doing to get anywhere near the Sustainable Development Goals from the UN. You know, we're miles away. We're about to have COP. And again, it's looking highly unlikely that any of the things that we've been talking about or have been discussed at COPs previously is happening. And we've got to find a way to actually move the needle, because these systems that we've put in place to try and hold people accountable, again, are not working. And this comes back to the same things that are holding businesses back from really creating change, same thing that's holding investors back from really creating change, is they can't see, the people in power can't see the changes that need to be made, however good their intentions are. This is why each of us needs to raise our voices. And again, what we're trying to do with it, with our global network of change makers, is to start really amplifying the voices with the different ideas, because without diversity in these positions of power, they're not coming through. The ideas aren't there. They cannot see what it is that they need to change.
Totally agree, Sarah. We have a lot of work to do with women in climate tech and innovation. I already have a few ideas just from this conversation again. So for everybody out there, the initiative is officially launched. There's no website yet, but you can follow us on LinkedIn. And there you receive all the news, all the activities, all the actions that we are planning with the initiatives. Connect with us. If you have ideas, please send them in our direction. And other than that, yeah, to all the women and as well as men out there who want to participate and change the needle or get the needle moving, as Sarah says, contact us, and we are very inclusive, and we'll bring you on board the next event. And yeah, stay tuned on that one. Thank you, Sarah, so much. Do you want to have a few last words on our initiative? And then we are wrapping this up.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, this is all about us taking action to try and enable other people, to create that environment for other people to be able to stand strong, to have some of the privilege that you and I have in being able to use our voices, to be able to create something and show everyone that they've got the opportunity to be a leader as we move forward with so much going on in the world today that feels very difficult and a lot of us, you know, fundamentally disagree with, that's almost our calling. You know, we don't as humans stand up and create change without a certain level of pain. And therefore, we just ask people to take a stand and to use your voice that you have. And we're here to help you figure out what that is, but also to create the network and be inspired by other people who are creating change. Because we play off each other. It's like, you know, you need a spark which will enable other people to spark, to light up. And that's what we're trying to do with this network. To reduce the barriers for more diverse leadership, more diverse voices to come out, and enable more people to stand up and actually just give it a go. We need each and every one of you if we're going to create, you know, a more sustainable future for life on Earth. And each of us has got something to contribute. And I just ask, if you want to explore your contribution, if you want to be inspired by other people who are creating change, then come along and get involved in our network.
Thanks so much, Sarah. And you hear from us, just follow us. And thanks for having this chat on Deep Dive Female Leadership in Climate Tech with me.
Zeit zum Auftauchen. Wir hoffen, dir hat's gefallen. Wenn es so ist, würden wir uns sehr über eine positive Bewertung und ein Abo freuen. Und falls du noch tiefer ins Thema eintauchen möchtest oder Kontakt zu unseren GesprächspartnerInnen suchst, kannst du dich über www.dwr-eco.com ganz einfach bei uns melden. Dieser Podcast wird von DWR Eco produziert, deiner internationalen Cleantech-Beratung für Markt- und Geschäftsstrategien, Politik, PR und Kommunikation.